T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We don't use that terminology to describe this segment enough. This is a newer type of situation.
Yeah, so the texter was like, why do you call it the 3 technique? And we're like, well, if you remember the Les Grobstein diatribe about what a 3 technique was,
it seemed perfect.
Then it's perfect. But really, it's a sports phrase with 3. Yeah. And it's 3 guests, 3 cities, 3 stories we're
interested
in.
3 is a magic number, et cetera. Just give us some time. It's a newer type of situation.
I don't owe you an explanation. Let's go to Kansas City, where we're joined by my guy, Therese Paylor. Does a great job covering the Kansas City Chiefs for the Kansas City Star. We always appreciate his time. First 5 weeks look like the best team in football since they look incompetent on offense. Therese, I know you watched the film as much as anybody. How do you explain what's happened to the Chiefs' offense?
I think there's breakdowns across multiple levels of the offense. I think some weeks the play calling's been bad. I think other weeks, most weeks, almost all weeks since the slide, the offensive line has been deficient either in run blocking or pass blocking or both. Pass blocking was okay on Sunday. They still only ran, Kareem Hunt only ran for 40 yards on 9 carries. Teams are actively trying to take away the run with the kind of tight coverage that the Chiefs are able to exploit on Sunday but hadn't been able to exploit in weeks prior to that. Some of that falls on the quarterback. A lot of that falls on the quarterback. A lot of it also falls on the play calling and also the inability for the line to hold long enough to take some deep shots. The receivers don't always make the correct side adjustments. They aren't always on the same page with Alex. That was a problem. And then the offense gets together this week, and then the defense falls apart. So they just can't put together a full game right now.
Well, that makes sense that it's a whole bunch of stuff like you're talking about, because it just feels so weird and kind of inexplicable. Andy Reid is, I have thought, always a brilliant play caller, brilliant offensive strategist. What has fallen apart for him in that regard? And he's given up the duties now, right?
Listen, he still does installs. That's where you put in the week's plays, and he has heavy oversight. So Nagy may have been the one deciding which plays are called when, but the play sheet was put together by Reed with help from Nagy. So, it's not like he doesn't have anything to do with it. He still, is a big part of the play calling kind of deal. Sometimes it's good to let somebody else call the order of the plays. That can be a good thing for you. Just get you out of tendencies, dial up some other things that maybe you're not as into. I mean, it can be helpful, and I think that's something they've probably been doing a little bit throughout the course of the thing. It just never really got publicized. I mean, Nagy is somebody he respects and thinks is a head coaching candidate. I'm sure he's had a lot of input leading up to this week, too.
Leads me in. I mean, we're going to be looking for a new head coach here this offseason, probably the first day after the season for John Fox. And most people want it to be an offensive guy who can help Mitch Trubisky develop.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy, obviously, there'll be talk about him being the next Doug Peterson to leave that tree. You buying Matt Nagy as a head coaching candidate?
Actually, I am. I actually am, more so than I was with Doug. Nagy is a guy who, like, the players really like and they really respect. I hear that across multiple levels of the locker room, too. That's not that common. He's also a guy that I think has a really good way with the media. You know, he never really says anything stupid. He never says anything that can hurt a team, but he also does it kind of in a way where, I just think he's got, a really good demeanor to be the face of a franchise as a head coach. It's a likable demeanor. He's a sharp guy football-wise. He played in college. I think they'll like him. I think the players like him. And as a play caller, I think he has some chops. Like, when the things were really going well, like, you heard a lot about, Alex was saying a lot of positive things about Nagy's impact on the offense. And I think there's something to be said for that. I actually really am. I think that'd be a really good hire. Yeah.
That's very interesting, Therese. Thank you. That's the third different assistant coach we've asked about and the first positive response. Frank Reich and Pete Carmichael were big no's. Unrelated.
I think this guy's got a nice future. I do. Yeah.
Therese Paler from the Kansas City Star. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, take care.
That's all we needed. I love the three technique. Keep it moving. Let's go to Pittsburgh. From 93.7, The Fan in Pittsburgh, he's your afternoon host. Chris Muller joins the three technique in the Spiegel and Parkin show. Chris, you know the context between those two teams and everything that went into last night better than we do. What did you make of that game last night?
Every time we talk in the run-up to a Bengals-Steelers game and discuss the potential for violence, like Vontaze Burfict, is he going to hurt somebody, is always a topic. There's a back-of-my-mind voice that says, are we overblowing this? Is this a media creation? Are we scare-tacticking too much? And then a game like last night happens, you know, and it kind of overwhelms the senses. You've got Ryan Shazier on a relatively innocuous play, risking paralysis or potentially being paralyzed, and it looks like the info there is good, that he's got some feeling and movement in his lower extremities. But then there's that. And then there's the usual kind of bloodlust, wanton violence that you see in Steelers-Bengals, and you seemingly see more of in primetime. It was just it was a weird game, man. A lot of people I've talked to said they couldn't really watch it with any kind of eye towards the game after Shazier's injury. And then with everything that happened late, it just kind of sort of reset itself to what you usually expect, which is these two teams trying to just blow each other up.
Juju Smith-Schuster's hit, we talked quite a bit about earlier on in the show, Chris. I think it was mostly clean. I mean, I know it's a crackback text, so technically it's illegal, but I guess I understand what he was doing, and I'm wondering how that's playing in Pittsburgh. Are people defending Juju Smith-Schuster today?
They are not unhappy about the target of the hit, to say the least. And I frankly don't blame people. And I thought that there's a couple things I want to say here. One, I like Ross Tucker's analysis a lot. I thought it was actually within the context of the play. Yeah, it was a peelback block. It was the Hines Ward, Keith Rivers rule. It was probably 6 inches too high, but man, it was a devastating hit. And if he hits him a little lower, it's, I think, almost as clean as that play can be. But when you have Vontaze Burfict, who tried to grab, I don't know if you guys have talked about this, he went off on the backboard, okay. But right after the play happened, he was trying to grab Smith-Schuster's ankle and, like, twist it. So it was very odd that he was in the full immobilization after seemingly being okay enough to make a grab for the ankle. He accused Antonio Brown of faking a concussion a couple of years ago. There's not a whole lot of sympathy, I'll be really honest about it, for Burfict. As for Juju Smith-Schuster, to people's credit here, no one has absolved him of the taunting after the fact. People are sort of split on whether they think the hit was clean. The only thing that he's getting dogged for at all, really, is the taunting. But even he released a statement right after the game and said there's no place for it. It was bad. It was unsportsmanlike. And I probably should have pulled up a little bit and not hit him the way I did.
Right. To me, I was saying earlier, everyone has their line because we've all made some like morality concessions by watching football and we all love it. And so we all have our different lines. So I'm not going to judge you if your line is here and my line is there or whatever.
Right.
But Antonio Brown yelling about karma, even though it is Vontaze Burfict, and if you believe in karma, he certainly has some coming to him. After Shazier has been taken off and he's been taken off, like to me, that is like, How can you justify that when you've got a guy off there? Like, so for me, that was over my moral line, even though it's not exactly a sympathetic victim.
I don't love that either. But I think that what that drives home to me more than anything else is just like how insane it is that these guys go back out there and there's maybe one play of pure awkwardness and this horrible feeling after Shazier, right? And then they just go back and it's business as usual. And I think it's a testament to how much they all hate Burfict. The other thing,
true,
guys, about those, that play, Brown gets destroyed, and I think the most egregious-looking play of the entire game, mm-hmm, in a game full of ugliness, by George Iloka. And I felt like the outrage nationally, now Pittsburgh had its own opinion, trailed the commentary. What are McDonough and Gruden doing there? They're practically crucifying Juju Smith-Schuster for all he did.
Yeah.
And then the Iloka play is just, well, that's a flag. He got his head knocked around like it was a bobblehead, and there's not a peep from either of those two guys. And it was, you know, the whole night they were butchering on the officials and just saying how bad the officials were. Gruden was messing up names left and right, and they chose that play, the most egregious-looking play to my reckoning of the whole game, and don't say a word about it because Brown pops right up and apparently is uninjured.
And after a whole shame on you, Juju Smith-Schuster rant, 3 minutes later, they're praising his physicality, is John Gruden. So, yeah, I mean, do you like football or not? After the Iloka hit, which I agree was absolutely filthy and the worst thing, Antonio Brown seemed to get a concussion test from Ben Roethlisberger verbally on the sideline. Are you okay? Like, I didn't see a whole lot of concussion protocol taking place for Antonio there.
Yeah, what on earth was that? I mean, people were confused, to say the least, about that one. Hey, what's your name? Antonio Brown. Okay, sounds good, buddy. Like are you guys on the same page with me? The concussion protocol seems like it gets, for something that's supposed to be so serious, practically laughed at. Like, it's become not, I don't mean this like it's a funny ha-ha thing, but the way the players try to circumvent it and treat it and just take care of themselves in those situations is almost laughable, man.
They always have, and now, even though these new rules are there, they're doing it. Russell Wilson a couple of weeks ago.
Right, I was going to say, that was the real egregious one that got it on top of everybody's mind. It's like, there's no way you could administer a concussion test and have him back in, and
Matt Moore in the playoffs last year for the Dolphins.
It goes back to what we were talking about, though. We all can intellectualize it, but then when they're on the field during the game, the last thing they're trying to do is intellectualize 40 years down the road their brain safety. They're trying to win a football game.
Right, they're trying to win a football game, and let's be honest, they don't like each other in large measure, and they're trying to get one over on guys still a lot. I mean, last night was one of those games where, I don't know about you guys, I'm like one of the last 10 boxing fans left in the United States of America. And the transaction I make intellectually when I watch a boxing match is there is no pretense about what the object of a boxing match is. It's to beat your opponent either into submission or to outpoint them or knock them unconscious. So, like, the transaction there, I think everybody gets it. Football is still about scoring or not scoring or preventing a team from scoring. The contact, the collisions are ancillary, but, like, it's harder for me to make that sort of intellectual transaction where I'm saying this is okay, I'm all right with what I'm watching, when it's football as compared to something where the only part of the sport or the only thing, essence of the sport, is hitting each other.
Yeah, I get it completely. And that's what I was talking about earlier, where we all have a different line. Like, I marvel at the violence and can appreciate it, and it's not going to stop me from watching because they've accepted it themselves.
And I would say to you, Chris, the players have made that transaction. They know full well what
Clearly.
They're doing. They know
Clearly.
Full well.
Chris, have
man,
a good
I
show,
would,
man.
I would applaud them if they had the guts, by the way, to actually hold out for an entire year for fully guaranteed deals. That would be something if they actually were willing to make that transaction.
100%. 100%. Unbelievable day to do a show after that type of game, man. Enjoy it.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
All right, thank you for the time. He sounded pained by all of the debating he was going to be having to do today. Mm-hmm. Let's talk Arizona State. I'm so excited for this. FanRag Sports covers Arizona State, all sports down there. We're joined now by Craig Morgan. Craig, greatly appreciate the time. Herm Edwards' agent said, I know he's going to, quote, put up a lot of points on the scoreboard of life, end quote. Herm Edwards said, we don't huddle anymore in society, and that's part of the problem, end quote. He did not seem to know that the devil was the mascot of Arizona State. I want a percent chance that this actually works and is a success, because I have it at about 2.
You are with the overwhelming majority of people right now in the belief that this is not going to work. This, you know, Ray Anderson, the athletic director down here, knew he had to think outside the box, but I think there are some people that think he's straight into the Twilight Zone with this hire. Herm Edwards, of course, hasn't coached anywhere other than the Under Armour All-Star game in 9 years. He hasn't coached in college in 28, and that was as a defensive backs coach at San Jose State. He was also, of course, Ray Anderson's former client, so there is a lot to sniff around and say that this just doesn't smell right.
Craig, is this about the fact that they cannot find a big-name head coach to take this job, so let's think outside the box, let's be innovative, and let's hire a CEO, which is basically what they called him in their press release. Let's get the biggest name we can, and then we'll have other people do the actual job. Is that what's happening here?
Two things to say on that. Michael Crow, the president of Arizona State University, has made it clear that he's not going to pay Big Ten or SEC money for a coach. So you have that hampering you. And, of course, you have the $12 million-plus buyout of Todd Graham to bring in the next guy. You have to worry about that as well. So those are impacting the situation. But I don't get the sense that Ray Anderson was really interested in anyone else. I think he had Herm Edwards identified a long time ago. I think Ray Anderson wanted to make this switch, to be honest, a year ago, and Michael Crow talked him out of it. So I think he had his sights set on Herm Edwards from the start.
I don't think we're giving that nationally enough attention. Ray Anderson, the athletic director of Arizona State, used to be Herm Edwards' agent.
Yep.
I just find, I find that to be amazing.
It is. It's one of the many things that, I mean, there's so many bizarre angles to this hire, let's face it. And, you know, I had the chance to talk to Ray about it after that press conference, and he insists that it had nothing to do with it, that this was just the right guy for a unique situation here. They're not going to pay him. I haven't seen the salary yet because we haven't got our public records request back yet. But Ray insisted it's not going to be about the money. When we see the number, we'll realize it wasn't about the money. Well, of course, what I just told you about Michael Crow not wanting to pay big money and that $12 million buyout, we all expected a lower salary anyway. But Herm Edwards comes in now with so many questions around him. Look, the guy can win a room. He was really engaging yesterday in that press conference, but does that translate into living rooms of recruits? Do they even know who this guy is? When we talked to a bunch of Arizona State players when news of this came out, a lot of them had no idea who Herm Edwards was, which is not a good sign. You know, he says he's got the ties from the Under Armour game, but I don't know how much name recognition he actually gets. I don't know how many people watch him on ESPN. I don't think kids are doing that.
You know,
so you got that. Go ahead.
As I try, Craig, to think about what could possibly go right here, because that's my nature, I feel like they're kind of openly saying what a lot of programs end up doing, which is a puppet at the top, and everybody else does everything. Like, and they're saying it, like there's a sport division, there's a recruiting division, there's an administrative division that are all operating under the CEO, Herm Edwards. Is it possible that they're just being open about something that ends up taking place at other programs?
Yeah, I think so, actually. And look, Ray came from the NFL. Scotty Graham, one of the key administrators, was with the NFLPA. He's going to take on a role that some have described as a GM, others have described as a liaison between all the groups. They've got an NFL approach. That's where they're going with this. And they're also using data, analytics. That's how they're going to evaluate talent. That's how they're going to evaluate their own personnel. So it is a different approach. And I would say something along those lines. Because they can't pay huge money, because they don't sit on fertile recruiting grounds, they had to probably think outside the box a little bit because, as you talked about earlier, it's hard to get a big-name coach to come to Arizona State. You know, I know people here think of it as a sleeping giant, but it's been sleeping for a really long time and probably for a good reason because it is not one of the premier programs in the Pac-12. Ray Anderson wants to change that. That's his job. So they've gone way outside the box to try and do that.
Yeah, Craig Morgan covers Arizona State. Last thing for me, Craig, I'd appreciate your time and insight. Do people actually expect him to be in the living room? Like you said, he can win a living room. Like it sounds to me like this is a retirement gig because it's closer to his place in California and he doesn't want to keep traveling back to Bristol.
Well, he said himself that he plans to do some of that. So I do expect him to be in the living room. We'll see how it goes. You know, there are a lot of discussions. There are a lot of parts like you just talked about. There's going to be a beefed up recruiting process. So we'll see how it plays out. But Herm does plan to do some of that face-to-face recruiting.
Unbelievable. Well, it reminds me of when Illinois thought outside the box and went for Lovie Smith, but it's actually a lot worse in just about every conceivable way, right?
Got news for you. Lovie Smith was a possibility here, too.
Wow.
Enjoy it, man. It's going to be a complete disaster.
Well, or it's going to be really interesting, and you might as well, I guess, if you're Arizona State.
He's a great quote.
As a reporter, the quotes will be great.
Yes. Hey, okay, Craig, before you go, was there any, so the Devils thing, the Scoreboard of Life thing, and the We Don't Huddle in Society thing, like, is there a quote or a moment that I'm missing from yesterday's craziness?
Well, the whole train metaphor, too, of course, but some might say all aboard the crazy train right now, but I think with the Devils thing, I think that one was overblown. Herm knows what the nickname is for the Sun Devils. He spent his first 2 years of college football at Cal, so they played ASU all the time. I think people maybe misinterpreted that. He was just having fun with that, but
he was just rolling.
Going to be a quote machine.
Yeah, he was just rolling. That's don't stop him. Yeah. He's rolling. You're gonna have a lot of that.
All right, thank you, Craig. We appreciate it. Let's hear that real quick, Campy, if you don't mind. Let's hear Herm Edwards not understand what the mascot is at Arizona State.
Coach Rubino, Devil's Digest.
Devil's Digest, huh?
Yes, sir.
Where are you located, my man?
Right here in Tempe.
Okay, Devil's Digest, okay. I'm Catholic now. I'm a Christian. Watch out them devils. Just saying.
Well, you can see,
we're good, brother. We're
you can
good.
See Devils all over the place.
I ain't taking it personal.
Good. Glad you're not taking it personal, because it's the mascot of the school you were just hired.
That's why they're called that. A little bit less.
I think it does. Michael Lombardi at 11 o'clock. It's Spiegelwood Park. It's on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What?
Oh, God, I'm having flashbacks. That audio of Herm Edwards brought to you by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. While you are stocking up on goodies for the holidays, do your family a favor by picking up an Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer, the number one preferred thermometer of pediatricians.
I bet Herm likes the Isley Brothers just rolling around out there at Arizona State. Got the
I'm on
down.
The train.
He's okay. He's going to ride the train until it stops, but it's not going to stop. And you can get on the train later. There will be seats available. It might not be comfortable because they're trying to build something.
But I get a cool hat as the conductor of the train. And you don't get that if you're riding the caboose.
I'm going to punch your ticket, whether you have brought a ticket or not. You can get the app and download a ticket right there
exact
on the phone.
Exchange is preferred. But with Apple Pay, the kids are telling me. Kids are big on the Snapchat.
There is a bathroom in every third car on the train. Got to walk through. Please give up your seats to a pregnant or elderly woman.
I have a very specific delusional coach who failed at a college program using a train metaphor flashback for you. Like, this is like an unbelievably specific
specific flashback. Yeah.
My 4 years at Syracuse University were the 4 years that Greg Robinson was the coach.
Yeah, he was a disaster.
Arguably the worst coach in Power 5 college football history. He won 10 games in my 4 years, most of them against FBF schools like UB. It was a train wreck, pun intended.
Okay.
With 2 games left in my senior year, they fire him. But they do not name an interim coach.
Oh.
So they allow Greg Robinson to coach the last 2 games.
I was around a radio show like that once.
Yeah. The press conference begins.
Oh.
And I'm sitting there. And Coach Dick McPherson, who famous Syracuse coach.
I'm sure, not Don McPherson, the quarterback.
Right.
Don McPherson.
Right. Yeah,
me.
Yeah. Dick McPherson is sitting there in the front row. Mm-hmm. And Greg Robinson says, "Well, Dick, I told you when I took this job that I think I can. And it reminds me of a children's book, The Little Engine That Could. And that train and that engine thought he could get to the top of the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And he was chugging and chugging and chugging along. And he was going, I think I can. I think I can. I think I can, Dick. And I'll tell you what, I still think I can. But other people now disagree." And he read the Wikipedia page verbatim of The Little Engine That Could at this press conference. And I was just sitting there like,
did he really?
This man has lost him. And then the next week,
this is
he
why
beat
you
Notre Dame on the road. It was insane.
Remember that one, Jay? Remember that one, Jay? Notre Dame boy?
Syracuse.
Nope.
Came into South Bend and beat him. Arthur Jones had like 4 sacks. It was insane.
Oh, it's never a good idea to give somebody a couple of weeks to hang around.
It's never a good idea.
The radio show in question was given like, I believe 2 weeks also. It was like, all right, we're going to be done with you, but play out these 2 weeks. So every call began with, I'm really going to miss you. You guys did a great job. Like, well, thank you very much. You're now going to move on. Everybody's going to be okay here. All right, what do we like to talk about? 2 hours later, exact same exchange for every phone call. 2 weeks later, same exchange.
The goodbye show in radio only works if you're leaving on your own terms. Like, if you're leaving on good terms with the company. Like,
sure.
I got a goodbye show in Kansas City because we had reached an agreement to end the contract and me to come to Chicago and the entire thing. You get a goodbye show. You're not going to napalm the company that just gave you the buyout. But if you fire somebody, yeah, you can't let them coach the last couple of games and give them that press conference.
No.
It was you could find it on YouTube, Greg Robinson, Little Engine That Could. Mm-hmm. One of the most remarkable press conferences of all time.
I mean, if he just in front of a microphone starts reading Wikipedia, is he available for overnights?
Campy.
I distinctly heard 2 laughs out of that.
Yeah,
they
fair.
Were out of courtesy.
Or a non-willingness to engage.
Kindness and love for Campy.
What is this song?
I don't know. It just happened. I need your help, though, Campy. What do we do? What do you do as the host of the I'm Fat podcast? I am haunted by a food item I did not eat over the weekend. I stared at it. I thought about it. I didn't do it.
Was it a salad?
No, because I'd get over that one fast.
Right. I can't say I've been in this situation, so I'm intrigued.
I mean, I think I have to go and get it as soon as the show ends today. I'm still thinking about it. It is 3 days later, 4 days later? Friday night, I went to the... go ahead.
Get to it, please.
I went to the Christ Kindle Market, okay?
Christ Kindle?
Christ Kindle Market.
Is this your pronunciation thing again?
No, I don't know. Chris? I'm a Jew. How do we pronounce that?
Chris.
Christ Kindle.
Yes.
It's got a T in it.
Oh, my God. Anyway, what is the food item you passed on?
The Chris Kindle. Is that what it is? Chris
this
Kindle
is
Market?
Great TSL. Good job.
Yeah. Christ. Oh, my God. We're hanging on every word.
So I went
here.
To the Christ Kindling Market, right?
Sure.
Yes. What are the Christ Kindle Market, which is like the German open air market that they have at Daily Plaza downtown where they sell a wide variety of nutcrackers and ornaments and like, you know, fur hats or knit caps, I should say, and potato pancakes and bratwurst and cider and all that kind of stuff, right? And beer, plenty of beer, steins you could buy and everything. There is a baked cheese house, H-A-U-S, pronounced house.
And you wanted to eat the house, didn't you?
No. The baked cheese, the raclette, are you hip to this at all?
No, I stopped listening.
Dude, you know what?
I'm sorry, I'm with you.
Come back. I'm here.
They have a
toasted French bread baguette, okay?
Okay, I'm in.
And then there is a giant wheel of Alpine cheese that is sitting there on a stand.
Okay.
And they raise the cheese up to a heating element that is apparently called the raclette warmer, right? And it heats this cheese, this Alpine cheese, into like this beautiful molten gooey and a little bit burned kind of just perfection.
Why didn't you eat it?
They tilt the wheel of cheese over and they take a giant knife and they just scrape the molten cheese onto the baguette itself. It looks like the greatest grilled cheese of all time. Then they close the baguette and they put an extra giant dollop of the melted cheese on the top of the baguette and they serve it to you like an ice cream cone.
Oh my God.
Right? Dude,
let's go. Right
sounds
now.
Like a cheese sandwich to me, but a very good cheese sandwich.
That's why I didn't do it, because I'm like, well, it's just a cheese sandwich. But I love a cheese sandwich.
Who doesn't?
I love a grilled cheese. And you can get it, they do it where you can get it with cured ham and spring onions, baby gherkins, and Dijon mustard. Doesn't that sound good?
Yes.
Yes!
Baby Dan Durkin? Right.
But I didn't have it because we were going out to dinner later. We went to tapas where I could order jamon and, you know, try to pronounce
it. Your life is so hard.
I just, I'm haunted by it. It's literally 3 days and I can't stop thinking about it.
Sound like one of them good problems.
That's right, Marlo. That's exactly right. So, yeah, you either have multiple meals or you go back and you put it on your meal bucket list and you just cross him off.
You just busted me. I was with my girlfriend, and if it was me, I would have eaten it. Even if there's a dinner reservation 90 minutes from then, which
right.
there was, no problem.
Right.
Would have eaten it then.
But there
then
was a witness.
There was a
witness.
100% correct.
Gotcha.
I would have gone for first dinner and second.
Gotta kill
dinner.
The witness.
Yeah.
Boy, that sounds like a topic for the podcast of foods you would never eat in front of people.
Yeah, that's what Jay had with the big item in the vending machine.
The big Reese's Pieces, I think, right?
And the full-size Hostess?
Or the cupcakes, the double cupcakes.
Yeah, I think it was three, actually. Three
It was
cupcakes.
Two.
Oh, dude.
So when are you gonna cross it off your list?
What are we doing after the show? Is the Chris Kindle,
show outing?
Is the Chris Kindle Market over there in Daily Plaza, is that one open? Are they? Is it? Yeah, it's happening during the day? We could go over and do it right after the show if we wanted to.
I like a cheese sandwich.
Show lunch.
All right.
Show lunch.
I'm on it.
Diaz?
Ray, you want to come? Got to stick around
Diaz,
for three
is it
hours.
Diaz?
Yeah. It's vaguely vegan, right? Sort of vegan? I don't know.
Sounds like the name of a store.
Vaguely vegan.
Well, Ray's a vegan, and there's so little that he can share with us in that regard.
In that regard.
Yeah.
He's allowed to share in other things.
That's why he shops at Vaguely Vegan. That's the only place he goes to. But yeah, all right. Well, these
the
sandwiches
phone lines are lighting up. I cannot even imagine. Are these people willing to run errands for us and bring us these cheese sandwiches?
I don't know.
These culinary experts? I don't know what they are. Robinson defenders?
This is at the Chris Kindle Market, the open air market, and perhaps it's available other places in the universe. I'm being told that there's a big German place up there in Lincoln Square that might have it as well. But yes, Texture. I too am aroused by the concept of this baked cheese sandwich.
We got Michael Lombardi at 11, and I want to laugh at something that people are debating as if they actually know the answer to when it comes to the Bears. We'll do it coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
One for one. You know what that's like? Campy, I don't know if we have the full Fred Hoiberg. I should have asked you about this before the show.
You never go full Fred Hoiberg.
I know. He started out last night after the game talking about how they jumped out to a 9-2 run. No rush. You don't even have to get it by whatever. Whenever. It was amazing in terms of lowering the bar of expectations.
So that's John Fox yesterday trying to spin the positive. They're 100% in the red zone.
100% in the red zone.
I told you, yeah. The numbers, they have now been to the red zone 22 times. 1.8 times per game into the red zone. They are dead last in the NFL.
Yeah.
They are only 31 red zone chances behind the Patriots, who have been in the red zone 53 times for an average of well over 4 per game.
It's a small difference for the next coach
That's
to
all.
Make up.
That's
yeah,
all.
Don't worry about it.
Other than that, lots of chances.
9-2. It's
that
an NBA game.
That is so sad. That is so sad. I remember I was in junior high, I think, or low levels of high school. And I was writing for the school news. Must have been low level of high school, ninth grade. And I was writing for the school newspaper. And Larry Nickel, still remember his name, the women's basketball coach, had coached a team. They lost. I believe the score was 65-11. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
65-11.
How'd the team with 11 put a positive spin on it?
I was a reporter, and I went to ask Larry Nickel about the game, the young reporter, and he said, a missed free throw here, missed jump shot there, things could have been different. Yeah, we only lost by 30. Missed free throw here, missed jump shot there, things could have been different.
He's talking about 9-2, it was three field goals and a safety, and it was late in the third quarter.
Right. It's like the Lawrence High girls team that lost by 54 points, and, a shot here or there.
Shot here or there.
Things could be totally different.
Anything could have happened. The audio brought to you by Taco Bell. Introducing Taco Bell's new $5 cravings deal, a cheesy gordita crunch, five-layer burrito, crunchy taco, cinnamon twist, and a medium drink, all for just $5. I understand the questions being asked. I heard the guys on the morning show ask Brad Biggs. He wrote about it. There's a discussion among Bears fans should Kyle Long get shut down for the season,
mm-hmm,
because he banged up his shoulder pretty good.
He's got multiple issues.
Well, he had the shoulder injury that he did not have surgery on, and he had the ankle injury, the reconstruction that he did have surgery on, then he had the finger injury and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just laugh at the idea that we could know. The idea is so – they have the information. They're not going to share the information with us, and they got to do a calculus on it, right? They got to be is Kyle Long healthy enough where he can be better than his backup Tom Compton, who appears to be bad? Uh-huh. And is a injured Kyle Long worth it to help protect Mitch Trubisky as he develops the season? And could Kyle Long further injure his shoulder the more he plays? Or is it as hurt as he going to be? Is he definitely going to need surgery with the 4 weeks extra help? Or is the recovery time from this shoulder surgery 4 to 6 weeks, where there's no difference if he does it January 3rd versus December 3rd or all that?
Some of that information we can gather, right?
How?
Well, if you're talking about the timeline of a particular surgery, there's historical precedent for
that.
We
don't know what
thing.
Surgery he has to have.
That's true.
we don't know. Is there a tear in his labrum? Did he separate his shoulder? Is it reconstructive? We don't know.
All right. The part that I understand what you're saying. The part that we could know by our own judgment and those of experts we trust is how well Kyle's playing.
No question.
What is the legit drop off between Kyle Long and Tom Compton? And that's a sad question to ask, but a true one.
That. I have no problem with that conversation. Of course, you can study the tape.
Yeah.
You can get blocking grades from people at Pro Football Focus. You can ask the coach and Kyle and people like that for their own evaluations of their talent.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to share medical information. publicly. We don't know what surgery he may or may not need to have, and we don't know the recovery time of that surgery that he may or may not have.
Mm.
And also, there is value to me of if Kyle Long can't further injure his shoulder, because I agree, he's a significant player. He signed a big contract. You'd like to have him healthy in time for training camp, and this is a wasted season, and these four games don't matter, and they may as well lose him from draft position and all that.
Yeah.
But if he's still better than Tom Compton, I want Mitch Trubisky in these four games to be protected to the maximum capability that the Bears have to protect him.
I do see
value in playing Kyle Long hurt this year.
And to have a useful running game so Mitch can actually run an offense that has some semblance of balance to it.
So I look at this as it's absolutely something that the Bears are considering. They gave voice to that yesterday. John Fox acknowledged publicly that it is absolutely possible that Kyle Long would need to get shut down, but they're going to keep doing the evaluations.
Was this before or after he pointed out their 100% success rate in the red zone?
I don't know the timeline of it all. I just went back and looked at the cut sheet. But it was discussed, but I think it's one of those things where we have no ability to have a strong stance of like, shut him down or play him. And unfortunately, we have to trust the Bears. And that's just not something that anybody does willingly, and their strength and conditioning staff has not given the benefit of the doubt, and they have injuries year over year.
Yes.
And it's just one of those things where it's like, you're not going to be satisfied with the answer that they give you, and you're going to just have to deal with however they go about it.
You're just
going
to have to deal with that and then live for a game. They're going to keep playing, right? There's nothing we can do to get them to just stop playing.
No, in theory, it would be a nice advantage. I saw Joe Ostrowski say that on Twitter coming off. You know, they play the Bengals next week. Bengals just play this real physical game. There's going to be ramifications from it. There's injuries and all that sort of thing, but the Bengals are okay and the Bears are awful.
The Browns are here on Christmas Eve day.
That's correct.
We will be doing hashtag show us your no-shows for that day.
Yep.
We have a winner from the other day, by the way.
We do. We still have to make contact with the person and all that, but it's been selected. And we retweeted it from @Spiegel_Parkins on Twitter.
Can't wait to offer that person exciting tickets for Bears-Browns.
Yeah. It's the person who you can see in the camera shot a row of empty seats, the time and score, which is the fourth quarter, and a person in the middle of the row of empty seats sleeping. It's a pretty good shot. It's a pretty good camera
shot. There's like 1:52 left in an incredibly two-point game at that point.
Correct.
As they're driving.
In a row of empty seats.
Dude is sound asleep.
It's a pretty solid photo. But we think we can do better for the Christmas Eve game when there could be three times as many no-shows.
I suspect that'll be the case. We're going to talk some Shohei Ohtani next hour. It's amazing, frankly, that the Cubs are even in the mix of the seven when you break it down and look at all the different parameters. And I think there's one incredibly obvious reason why they are still in that mix.
Let's do the valuation of coaching jobs and vacancies, like compared to others, the situation last night in Monday Night Football and the violence and all of that with Michael Lombardi. Always a ton to talk about. One of our favorite guests, Michael Lombardi, joins us next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.